Hello, and welcome to Megacity Book Club, a podcast all about the collected editions of the galaxy's greatest comic, 2000 AD. I'm Eamon Clark, and my guest for this episode, known as Albion on the Forum, it's Steve Longdon. Welcome to the Book Club, Steve.
Hello, Eamon.
So, you know what's coming. 2000 AD Origin Stories is where we begin. Can you tell us yours?
I can. Mine was Prog 86, the merger with Star-Lord.
Right.
And I read Star-Lord from the first issue, and then when it merged with 2000 AD, that was that. I've never missed an issue since. When 2000 AD started, I was almost seven, I suppose. Still reading the Beano and the Dandy. My older brother got 2000 AD from the start, but didn't stick with it for very long. I remember it, but I remember the free gifts more than the comic at the time.
Oh, right, yes.
He dropped it and stuck with his Battle and Tiger, I think he was reading at the time. And then I guess when Star-Lord came out, I think I must have been ready for the next step up in comics from the Beano and everything, and that was that. And here I am, still reading 2000 AD, and never missed an issue since that Prog 86.
Oh, right, okay. So I'm interested, you come in through Star-Lord in a way. That was your sort of gateway.
Yeah, Star-Lord from issue one, yeah, which I loved. I thought it was great. And then when it was ending and merging with 2000 AD, I remember being quite excited about that. It didn't disappoint me. And at the time, I probably didn't realise what it meant. But I was like, yeah, now I can. I remember that from when my brother got it, so now I can start reading that. And of course, I wanted to read Judge Dredd and what have you. And so it was great for me.
Okay. So you had, and of course, you had Strontium Dog right from the beginning then?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. We may be coming back to Strontium Dog somewhere later on in this podcast. okay, great, Steve. So tell us, what's the book you've picked for Book Club this time?
I've picked The Taxidermist, the collected edition that Rebellion put out a few years back.
Yep, 2011 collection. Yeah. So it's got four stories. I thought it was three, but there's a little extra at the very end, which we'll mention briefly. But it's just four stories. Tell us about the first one.
Right, well, the first one, which actually was a Dread story, rather than the second one, which is just The Taxidermist without him as such. But, the first one, I love it for just the craziness of it all, but the
that's why you picked it, presumably, is it's
the mad black humour of John Wagner in the first story, also written by Alan Grant as well.
Yes, it's the pair for the first story. I should do the credit. So the first one is just called The Taxidermist. As you say, it's a Judge Dredd strip. John Wagner, Alan Grant, Cam Kennedy. I think his first appearance on the podcast. Tom Frame letters, Progs 507 to 510 from 1987, I believe. So tell us about Jacob Sardini.
Yes, the taxidermist himself. Well, taxidermy on humans in Megacity 1 is legal, which I thought was a fantastic idea for a story. And Sardini is one of the best, if not the best, in the city. And a mob boss turns up, and Sardini has had a favour from him in the past. So he's kind of Don Giovanni Lambretta, is the mob boss's name. He wants his son, Paxo, stuffed.
Of course.
For a character. But yeah, his son has been killed in a mob hit, and he wants his son and his killers stuffed and put on display, but in the display that makes his son look heroic, which apparently he wasn't, but the Don's denying that. And that's like the basic premise of the story. There's some great descriptions in it of the stuffing process and what they go through, and Sardini has to just get on with it and do this for the mob, but of course, Dredd is on the case, and
Dredd is chasing down the gangsters. There's some revenge killings planned. There's a, you know, the Lambretta and the Geek Boys are planning a huge, looks like it's going to be a huge shootout. And of course, Dredd is following it all. But as you say, it's almost, it's yet again, it's one of those stories where Dredd's sort of off doing his thing in various places. But we've got this character, Jacob Sardini, who's just quietly working away. And then, of course, when it all goes horribly wrong, he has to sort of undo what he has created. And he's a sort of, he's a wonderful little character. He gets, of course, you know, he gets even more attention paid to him in later stories. But he's just this quiet little competent man, really, isn't he?
That's right. And it's one of those stories that doesn't rely on Dredd. It's, I kind of miss this in modern Dredd at times. It's got the crazy characters and weird humour and dark humour, and it's more about the people of the city and the city itself again, like a lot of stories were. But of course, Sardini, he does this for the Don. He has to work through the night, and he does it. But of course, Dredd catches up with the bad guys and kills most of the gang. And then, of course, Sardini's stuck with the piece and doesn't want to get caught out himself when he finds out the news. So he decides to take it apart. And we have a nice little twist bit at the end.
Yes, where Sardini does, in fact, encounter Dredd in a marvellous little moment as he's trying to dispose of some evidence.
He does, yes. I wasn't spoilery we were going to get with that. But this story's been around a long time. But yeah, he gets fantastic piece where Jacob has to get rid of the skins, I think it is. Everything else he can actually get rid of. And that's because they basically skin people and put them on these body molds. And yeah, he goes out with a bag in the middle of the night and somebody tries to rob Jacob Sardini of this bag. But of course, Dredd's passing by, gets the bad guys and helps Sardini get rid of this bag that Dredd doesn't know what's in it, because he tries to grind it down at home in his garbage grinder, but of course that gets stuck, so it goes to the public one down the road, and it's Dredd that actually puts it in the grinder for him, which is a fantastic moment.
Yes.
In the story.
Dredd having the evidence of a crime in, sort of on the end of his day stick, and then assisting Sardini to get rid of it without knowing, and then Sardini sort of turns his back and walks out of the story, as it were.
That could have all ended there. That might have well been the end of it. But, of course, he does return later.
He does, yes. So I should say this is black and white, but, of course, we get the two, the double-page colour spreads from Judge Dredd at the time.
The centre page, didn't they, that were in colour.
And I've just noticed that I think it's Cam Kennedy's inked by Mark Farmer on all of the episodes.
Yeah, it does say Kennedy Farmer.
It does, doesn't it? Yes, I just noticed that. And of course, you know, as I say, we haven't really touched upon Cam Kennedy as an artist on Dredd, but here he is with his wonderful helmets and that sort of weird muscular sort of Dredd he draws.
Yeah, every artist thinks something different, and Kennedy certainly does as well. He has differences in, like say, the physique of him and the helmet as well. There's a very straight line across the top of the eyepiece.
Yeah.
But wonderful artwork. It's funny, when I thought about reading this book again, I always associated the taxidermist with Ian Gibson. I'd kind of forgotten that each story has a different artist.
Yes, absolutely, yes, each one. And, I mean, yes, I think we're going to be talking a lot about Ian Gibson in a few moments, but here's the first episode, a four-parter, and some mob violence, an introduction to the art of taxidermy in Megacity One, and of course, as you say, this wonderful Cam Kennedy artwork with Mark Farmer pencils. I don't know, was Tom Frame doing the colour on the double page spreads in those days? I know he used to do some of them.
Yes, so, because I've heard it said a few times that, and actually on the latest 2008 Thrillcast, the one about Steve Dillon, they mentioned Tom Frame and said that he actually worked in the office and did most of the colouring at the time.
Yes.
Assuming it may well be Tom Frame.
Well, you mentioned Steve Dillon as well because he did a cover for Prog 507 with Don Giovanni Lambretta sort of threatening Sardini. You want to end up in a tin, Sardini?
Classic line.
Yeah, classic line, classic cover. And of course, this is the first podcast I've recorded since last week when we heard the sad death of Steve Dillon. I know we'll be coming back to talk about him on other podcasts in the future, but, you know, I suppose we just sort of share everybody's sadness and what a great Judge Dredd artist he was.
One of the 2080 greats, and also on other things like Preacher.
Yes, I mean, obviously, you know, incredibly famous and well known for Preacher, and you know, I'm sure we're glad that he got to see that become a TV series. But yeah, those classic Judge Dredds, you know, the death of Judge Giant, the battles with Orlok, and Cry of the Werewolf. You know, you can't beat it, can you?
No, and excellent work on Rogue Trooper as well, of course.
Yeah, absolutely, yes.
Before any it was superb. I always thought he was one of the, like I say, one of the 2080 greats.
Yeah, absolutely. So sad to note his passing as well. But there you go. So, yes, we've got Cam Kennedy, Mark Farmer, probably Tom Frame colouring, doing the letters. And, of course, we've got the winning combo of Wagner and Grant doing their sort of usual dark humour approach to some of the sort of I don't know what you call them, the sort of side pursuits, the sort of the bits that go on in the side bits in the, you know, the edges of Mega City 1. So diversions and pursuits and the strange Mega City 1 way of life.
Yeah, and the taxidermist is certainly one of the strange ones, I think, with the...
I mean, it seems incredibly weird and bizarre to us that they not only accept human stuffing, but actually they quite like them being posed in all sorts of weird scenes or tableaus as a way of commemorising the dead.
The shot of where somebody's just had the head and the shoulders on the wall rather than the full body stuffing. I don't know if that's a cheaper offering for the citizens or what it is.
Yes, head and shoulders, please, on a mockwood plaque for the wall. Mrs. Philpott had her mother done that way, and it looked ever so tasteful.
And we see his wife as well has also been stuffed.
Yes, actually, you know, it's wonderful because Jacob Sardini's wife, you know, is stuffed, and his little conversations that he has with her, or he's rather his. Talk the way he talks to her and when he kisses her on the cheek as he goes up every night. Incredibly touching. I mean, he's a wonderful character that comes out through these three stories as we go along. He's very dignified. He's very sort of precise and correct. He believes what he's doing has got great merit and that it should be done to the best of his abilities. And, you know, he's the best there is.
Yeah, that's right. And it's kind of a bizarre way of being when you consider what he's doing.
Absolutely, yes. I mean,
the wife is in each story, and in each story she's in a different pose, which I think is excellent. He obviously changes her around.
Yes.
In the first one, she's kind of got some kind of hoover in her hand, and later on I think she's sitting down having a cup of tea. And so every few years or so he reposes her and has a chat with her each night. And yeah. And like you say, a very precise and dignified man but also sees his work as art as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's another bit of that weird Mega City 1 approach to death because, you know, it's come up a couple of times in this podcast when we talked about Resick or Recyke. And this thought they have that, you know, would you like to see your beloved on the belt? It gives people comfort, or some people find it comforting. And, you know, we're reading it and thinking, oh, my goodness, I can't think of anything worse.
Yeah, and they're all just thrown on the belt, aren't they? They're just like going individually. They're just hundreds of people on a giant conveyor belt.
Yeah, naked bodies just, you know, heading towards the grinders and the mashers or whatever. So yeah, we've got the recycle, we've got taxidermy,
The mob.
Yeah, the mob.
The old style mob kind of thing.
Yes, perhaps slightly showing a sort of throwback to 1970s boys comics with their slight racial stereotypes, I suppose. It's very sort of stereotypical Italian mob family.
Don, what a great name.
Yeah, Giovanni Lambretta, fantastic. Okay, and it's splendid. So as you say, we've got Jacob Sardini, and then at the end of the story, he has this lucky escape with Dredd, and he sort of turns his back, and when he's walking stick, he taps off into the night, and we think we won't see him again. But what was it? It's about 10 years later. It's 1998. It's the magazine, volume 2, issues 37 to 46, The Return of the Taxidermist, by this time just John Wagner on his own. And of course, as you've said, Ian Gibson on art, Annie Parkhouse letters this time. So tell us, what's the setup for The Return of the Taxidermist?
Well, this one's a bit different. It's not actually a Dredd story, is it? It's in the Just Dredd magazine, but it's like it's the taxidermist's own story. I think Dredd's only in like one panel.
Yeah.
As a flashback to the previous story. But in this one, Sardini's obviously got a bit older and things are changing in the world of human taxidermy, and he's slowing down. But he gets visited by Fraulein Korpusstopfer.
Yes.
I assume is it corpse stuffer, perhaps?
I think that is probably some sort of cod German for corpse stuffer, yes, absolutely.
Who wants her father stuffed, and it's we find out that Sardini came second to him in the Beirut Olympics.
Not only do they stuff their dead, but it's also become an Olympic sport.
Oh, and yes, and he recreates her father's winning piece, which was the birth of Hitler. more dark.
Yes.
Kind of humour there, and he makes the surgeon at the birth in this piece her father. And Fraulein Korpusstopfer persuades Sardini to enter the next Olympics in Kathmandu.
Yes, the Mega Olympics. They're off to Nepal when she finally persuades him, because he has some qualms about doing it. As you say, he has another one of his conversations with his wife, who this time he's posed at her dressing table combing her hair while he's getting ready for bed. He's having this conversation with her about it. But yeah, he does agree to go into the Mega Olympics. And Frau Korpusstopfer, who's a great character in herself, she becomes his assistant because she has dual nationality, so she qualifies to be the Mega City One in the Mega City One taxidermy team. And the Mega Olympics have got a bit bizarre in terms of the sports they include in the future. Again, yeah. Wagner having great fun.
There's some great kind of side stories within this story around that. This is a longer story than the first one, but you know, like you say, we've got Olympic events that include housework,
yep,
daring, flatulence, eating, which of course we've seen in Mega City One before, and as well as sky surfing, we've got there's also insulting,
yep,
pop events, and of course sex.
Yes, there's the Sex Olympics.
And there's a bit in the story with there's some great bit with the sports commentators, which, of course, Wagner's written things with commentators for to great effect, but where they're just not at all interested in things like swimming or athletics or something. I'm not sure that's even mentioned, because all they want to know about is things like staring and flatulence and whatever sport. Hilarious. We also get a fantastic little story within it about the staring contest with Agnes Laser Gaze Bolton of Mega City One.
Isn't she fantastic?
Hilarious.
Yes, where they keep going back to the staring competition to see how well Agnes Laser Gaze Bolton is performing. Absolutely marvellous. And the conclusion to that little sort of side story is great fun as well. Wagner, I mean, he's doing his humour at he's dark and humorous best here, holding up that sort of mirror to society, and our foibles about sports and mass participation events. It's great fun.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's a staring event. 30 hours, 12 minutes and 53 seconds, Agnes manages. But only because they then realised the other contestant died somehow.
And nobody noticed, yeah. They thought she was defeated, but no, her opponent had died. We shouldn't laugh, but it is so funny when it's delivered, the punchlines. And of course, there's also slightly getting away from the taxidermist, there's another side story about the Mega City One climbing team, because there's a Mount Everest climbing competition that's just going horribly, catastrophically wrong for everybody, but particularly for the Mega City One team. And again, Wagner just writing these great sports commentators, having a whale of a time reporting on this stuff, carrying out radio interviews with teams struggling on the mountain, lost in snowstorms. And I don't think we ever find out the conclusion for the Mega City One climbing team.
I don't think they're actually found, are they? I think it's a missing, presumed dead kind of
thing. Yes, they are, I think, yes.
They're quite happily in... completely enclosed environments, enjoying all the fine things in life, and these people are out doing this for the Olympics and dying, which again is just a great hilarious bit of fun.
Absolutely, yes.
From Wagner once again. And then we get another kind of side plot that gets a bit of a political comment.
Yes, because Nepal... is ruled by the sort of like kindly guru Mahamana.
Sardine walks into one evening, but he's being watched by the army.
Yes, the military, the generals basically are sort of like, they're not happy. They're not happy that, the enlightened ruler is sort of making their country a better place. They want their old ways back. And as you say, there's some political manoeuvrings going on behind the scenes of the Olympics that poor old Jacob will get sort of caught up in as well, unfortunately.
Yes, while he's trying to compete and he's slowing down as he's older and he's and I think he feels he's struggling and he's not too happy with modern techniques in taxidermy, like animation and things that are coming in that he doesn't approve of. He's also got to cope with the fact that the army do get rid of the guru and then they want Sardini to work on him.
Yes, that's right. They force him into making his first animated stuffed skin, I guess. But of course, again, without giving too much away, Jacob sort of has the last laugh in a way at the end. There's a nice little punchline for that one as well.
He hates the animation, but he uses it to his own ends. His own end later on, and at the time while that's going on, he kind of feels a bit like pulling out of the Olympics. He doesn't really feel that it's his thing, and he doesn't want to do the animation, but of course he recreates something he did before called Explosion in a Bus Queue.
Yes, so this was his entry in the, what was it, the Beirut Olympics that he came he came second in.
The Fraulein Korpushofer's father, yeah.
Yeah.
So he recreates that, but it's supposed to be animation. He says he won't do it. And they're like, oh, well. And there it is, and they see it, and he's like, oh, well, we can't have this. He can't win. But then, of course, as they turn away, it's gone not quite precisely timed as he wanted, but, of course, exploding the bus queue this time explodes.
Actually, yes, that's right. He delivers animation with an actual explosion in the bus queue.
Yeah, and he's filled the bodies with animal guts and things, I believe. And of course, the crowd go mad for this. The judges love it, and this time he wins his gold medal.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, we can reveal that Jacob Sartini does indeed get the gold for Mega City One, the gold that he'd long deserved. Beautifully done. And of course, Ian Gibson art. Now, I guess this is Ian Gibson colouring himself, I would think, is it?
I think it is, because it doesn't look like line work and then coloured. It's like, I think, has he painted this?
Well, it's very beautiful.
Because throughout the story as well, certain bits, I don't know if it's style doesn't really change, but I think some of the materials change, because some of it looks kind of airbrushed, some of it's painted, or some of it's maybe markers. I don't know. There seems to be various different ways he does things.
Yes.
Characters' faces tend to change a bit depending on what he's using, I think.
Right.
Whole thing, but wonderful stuff. I mean, it's a shame that Ian Gibson had supposedly had a bit of a falling out with 2000 AD, and it's a shame we didn't see more of him in the last, you know, later years of 2000 AD, or and even still, I'd still like to see him back.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, if we want somebody to deliver a slightly comical, dark humour story, his style is fantastic for it.
Yeah, a bit more toony style than some artists, but not always. The other stories, his art is a bit more, I'd like to say realistic in a way, but less of that cartoony look.
Yeah, and he suits Sardini perfectly. I love the image of Sardini, this slightly plump elderly man with his narrow ankles and his great facial hair. You know, it was pretty good with Cam Kennedy, but in here he's just great.
It really suits Gibson, and the he has a great way of drawing costumes as well.
Yes.
From boots to hats or whatever, and like you say, the figure of Sardini, quite rotund, and the skinny feet, the big feet, skinny legs. Yeah. Wonderful. And of course, all colour, this story as well.
Yes, all colour, all 10 parts in colour. Yeah, wonderful things with costume. Frau Corpusstopper, she wears some wonderful flowing robes and outfits, and she also she has a different blonde wig in every sort of scene she's in, or at least I think possibly for every day of the Olympics or something like that.
Yeah.
Wonderful, yes, Ian Gibson hair.
Her hair keeps changing, and then of course we see a bit later where she's sitting there completely bald with all these wigs in front of her.
Yeah. And of course the sports reporters, they're quite cartoony and wacky. And then I'm looking at some pages where Sardini goes on a sort of late night walk through Kathmandu. And a bit like the way he was walking through the mean streets of Mega City One, he's sort of fond of a nighttime perambulation. But the pages there, the beautiful stuff at nighttime, the Mount of Eagles where the city's dead are taken to be eaten by birds, and the next page where he encounters the guru being carried through the night on his platform that they carry him on. Absolutely stunning stuff.
Yeah, because at first he meets the one of the kind of poorer citizens of Kathmandu, doesn't he?
Yes.
Sadly, appears later on that the army is he's one of the people the army is trying to get rid of, as such, get the poor off the streets. Whereas the guru is, well, he's all peace and love for everybody.
Yeah, it's absolutely fabulous. We were talking about Ian Gibson because we did the Ballad of Halo Jones with, yes, Sharon and Rachel, and I was saying that book 3 of Halo Jones might be the best thing Ian Gibson had ever done. And Sheridan was saying, you know, he's done other things that perhaps might outstrip it. And I confess I hadn't read this story until then. This may be one of the stories he was referring to, because The Taxidermist is just fantastic Gibson art. beautiful showcase, really. I mean, you know, he's got all these weird and wonderful characters, weird and wonderful sports, some great geography, some backgrounds. It's just fabby.
Yeah, and he's got the crazy entries for the taxidermy that he has to draw as well.
Yes, that's right. He gets to draw all the scenes, the tableaus that they create.
The Transylvanian Banquet is one of the entries.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Korean entry, Banquet in Transylvania. And of course, he had to draw the Birth for Hitler one as well, you know, to design all that as something that looks like an artistic piece in a competition is a piece of work in itself, I think.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, John Wagner famously fairly sort of light on his panel descriptions in his scripts, as we know. So presumably a lot of this is down to Ian Gibson and his soar away imagination, just, you know, having great fun with these, as you say, Banquet in Transylvania, Explosion in a Bus Queue. There's one, is it a restaurant scene? Everything's just wonderful.
I'd watch more of the Olympics if it was like this.
Yes. Which of these sports would we like in the Olympics? Well, this staring. If we could have a competitor as good as Angus Laser Gaze Bolton.
Synchronized swimming is featured in this story as well, of course, but somebody in the crowd gets so bored with it, he jumps in and massacres the entire synchronized swimming team.
It becomes a literal bloodbath, doesn't it?
And a very cartoony commentator on that one as well.
Absolutely, yes, with the huge glasses. Oh, he's drawn blood all right. The synchro swimmers are dying like flies in there.
But yeah, you do actually see some quite different styles in various panels by Gibson in this. And you mentioned Halo Jones, which is a slightly different style again as well. It's always Gibson, but there's subtle differences in some of the things that he does. And you know, there's more cartoony faces in this than there would be in something like Halo Jones.
And you said you'd like to see him back on the prog. I mean, presumably you'd like to see him back on something like this rather than the sort of darker stories like City of the Damned or whatever. This seems to, you know, something like this suits him perfectly, doesn't it?
I think it does, yeah. I mean, I like pretty much everything he does anyway, but yeah, things like this and the Robo Hunter stuff, of course.
Oh, of course, yes.
He was the Robo Hunter artist, I think, for most people, if not everybody. It wasn't the same without him.
Well, it's impossible to think of Robo Hunter without Ian Gibson in a way, isn't it? It's like, dare I say, it's like Johnny Alpha without Carlos, really.
Yeah, there's certain stories that you, as much as we love all these different artists and some of the stories can go with hundreds of artists like Dredd has over the years, but like you say, one or two like Halo Jones, Strontium Dog, you do associate with certain ones, I think.
So that's The Return of the Taxidermist. Fabulous story set amongst the Mega Olympics of Kathmandu. Jacob Sardini, very memorable. Frau Korpestopper is fantastic. I love the sort of, as we said, all the sort of side plots and side stories and the sort of political.
It's kind of bigger than just the taxidermist himself, that story.
Yeah, it's great.
So much else going on, but that does make it very good with especially the Olympic events. It's just hilarious.
So then we get. Now, did I get it wrong last time? I think was The Return of the Taxidermist, is that 93-94?
Yeah, the first one was 87, and then Return was in 93.
Right. Now,
that we get Revenge of the Taxidermist, and we're back in 2008 now, rather than the magazine, and that was in 1998.
Yes, Progs 1087 to 1089. Script, yep. John Wagner, but this time we've got Trevor Hairscene on art with colours by Alan Craddock. Tom Frame's back for letters as well, which is nice. Always lovely to see the work of the late, great Tom Frame.
Yeah.
So tell us about this story, Steve.
Yeah, well, this one, back to a shorter story again. And things have changed in the world of taxidermy. As we know, they have these weird fashions going on in Meg City 1, and they often change quite often, I think. And the citizens of Meg City 1 aren't content with just having their loved ones stuffed anymore. They now have their skins put onto robotic frames now. So they're basically reanimating.
Yes, animations, which Jacob was all against in the Olympics, has become the thing. In particular,
he does not approve of this at all.
No, not at all.
It's not a work of art to him. It's just reanimating somebody.
Yes, this company, Absent Friends, who will recreate your loved ones and give them movements and voices, and even get them to do the housework for you.
Yeah,
which is bizarre and morbid, you know, even more so than just having them stuffed.
Yeah, it is. I think you're right. as weird as that may be.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're kind of bringing them back to life.
So Jacob doesn't like this. He's more or less semi-retired, but his business continues.
His assistants are doing most of the work, but business is going off a bit. So Absent Friends want to buy the Sardini name, but of course he won't sell. And Jacob's assistant Roy offers to buy the business, but he wants to do robotics as well, because that's the thing. And of course Sardini's not having that.
And then he has an encounter with Judge Dredd again, as he's sort of like tip-tapping through the streets with his walking stick.
Yeah, he goes off on one of his walks around the city, and like you say, meets up with Dredd again, and they just have a little chat. But
it's just a little moment in the streets.
Yeah, it's a little Dredd passing by, and he says, "Oh, how are you keeping?" And he's like, "Oh, I'm getting old and what have you." And and I think he's moved. He's moved to a new place, isn't he?
The Elchelts out on the south wall, yes. Catch all the radiation blowing in. You could see me in the dark, you could read by me, he says.
Yeah, and he has another chat with his wife, who's now sitting on some kind of floating chair holding a cup of tea.
Yes. And
tells her this whole robotic thing's vulgar and there's no art in it anymore.
And pecks her on the cheek.
He does again, yeah, and he's going out to see a lady friend of his.
He is, yes, but it all goes horribly and quite disastrously wrong, unfortunately, when they're attacked by a motorcycle gang, and Jacob, ever the gentleman, goes to the defence of his new lady friend and gets horribly injured in the process, unfortunately.
Yeah, and of course Dredd takes on the gang, and poor old Jacob, well, that's the end of him.
Yes, so tragic scenes in the hospital. Here we have Wagner, again, spoilers, but Wagner not being sort of afraid of killing off his characters. So poor old Jacob, this is the end of Jacob Sardini. I'm guessing it must be right at the start of the middle episode of this three-parter that poor old Jacob succumbs in the hospital, and his assistant, he leaves the business to his assistant Roy, and Roy is full of sort of like obviously anger and vengeance and making threats, which Dredd gives him a fairly kind and sort of considerate warning for, in Dredd fashion. This is the older Dredd fashion, you know, who's a bit more accepted of certain things. Says, you know, this is considering your mental state. It's only a warning.
Yes, leave the judging to us.
Yeah.
Rather than sending him to the cubes for 2 years, he does actually take into account what's going on and says, you know, we'll accept your upset, but leave it to us. But of course, Roy, well, the business is now his, but Roy does something that Jacob probably wouldn't approve of, but he animates Jacob as a robot.
Yes, absolutely. A robot, and not just a robot, a vengeful street fighting robot.
Well, this is where the revenge comes in. You've got this old guy who's been stumbling around with his stick in all these stories, and then he's animated and he ends up going to a bar and beating up the gang.
Beating up the biker gang. There's a wonderful moment when he snaps his walking stick in half and uses them sort of, it's almost like Daredevil and his billy clubs, I thought, you know, as he leaps through the air. Reanimated Jacob Sardini, the taxidermist himself, taking it to the motorbike gang.
Yeah, and he just becomes this fighting machine, I suppose. And of course, Dredd turns up and he's like, "But you're dead." And he's like, "Yes, quite so."
Yes.
Well, it's not hard for Dredd to work out how he's got there. It's obviously Roy's work. And of course, Roy and his partner Angora do end up getting some time for this violence. 2 years.
And we see Jacob Sardini's skin. Currently can be seen at the Museum of the Mega Olympiad, where it twice daily recreates his gold-winning animation, Explosion in the Bus Queue.
Yeah.
And there ends the story of the taxidermist. I mean, it's an odd little tale at the end.
That's the one of the three that's the least satisfying for me. It's, I don't know. It's a short little story that just kind of gets rid of him and puts the lid on Jacob Sardini, and a bit of a strange end for him, I think.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
It doesn't work as well as the others, and because I like the character, I've got no problem with characters being killed off. Sometimes it's a good thing, but I think Sardini might have had a few more appearances in him, from my point of view. Maybe not in major stories, but yeah, he could pop up occasionally somewhere. Just maybe for one or two more stories. This one didn't quite work for me.
Yes. I mean, it's strange in a way because he was a character getting old and aware that he was getting old and slowing down. And sadly, he doesn't get his sort of moment with his new lady friend, or he doesn't get to ride off into the sunset. He gets this rather violent ending himself and then becomes a violent figure of vengeance. So it's strange in a way, as ever.
Yeah, but I like it when stories do go like that, when you think, oh, you don't get the expected ending. But I really like the character of Sardini, and I think what you say with the riding off into the sunset kind of thing would have been the sort of ending I would have wanted for him.
Yes.
I think. But I can't knock Mr. Wagner because he's an amazing writer, and it is a good little story, but I just think it doesn't quite fit with the other two for me.
Yeah, okay. And it's partly because we've come to love Jacob Sardini so much over the previous two stories, isn't it? I mean, he's just been this wonderful character at the edge of the Dreadverse. Just marvellous stuff, particularly in that middle 10-parter where he's at the Olympics, which is just terrific stuff. So, yeah, we get this odd little sort of finish at the end where it becomes the revenge of the taxidermist, or I suppose the revenge of the taxidermist's assistant in a way.
Mm, yeah, a short, sharp, violent end to it all, whereas, like you say, you had the longer one in the middle and you had a nice little setting up of who he is in the first story. And I suppose a more gentle story in a way, if you can have such a thing, about human taxidermy.
Yeah, absolutely, yes. It's, you know, well, it's just that he's so dignified throughout the whole thing, isn't he? He regards it all, as you said right at the start, he regards it as an art, he regards it as a dignified thing. He's very respectful, he's very considerate, he gets sort of calm and dignity and art out of what he does. He is the artist trapped in Mega City One, isn't he?
Yeah, and Mega City One, well, I assume art is a quick and fleeting thing in Mega City One, really.
Yes, yeah, I guess so. Particularly for this elderly man who's sort of come to the end of his career, yeah. But has his glory at the Kathmandu Olympics. Thank goodness.
Yes, and he gets his gold in the end.
I was interested to note that when I was looking at some of the progs and Meg's details, that the last of the 10 parts of the middle story, Return of the Taxidermist, appeared in the magazine volume 246, which was the same issue that Bury My Knee at Wounded Heart appeared in, which is another great story by John Wagner with Peter Doherty art about the sort of megacity way of death. And again, yeah. Dredd making a sort of considerate decision at the end of that. Perhaps an unexpected one, you know. Another lovely story and another interesting way that Wagner has looked at death in Megacity 1.
Yeah, that is another classic for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm taking some of this from... at the moment, I'm looking at the Hachette Mega Collection, which is volume 72, The Art of Taxidermy. And Michael Mulcher has written an essay at the end of that called A Dignified Response, in which he talks about mortality and death in the world of 2000 AD and in Dredd stories in particular. And I have to say, hats off to Michael Mulcher, because it's a brilliant essay. And he talks about several of these stories, but also about Johnny Alpha and various other bits and pieces. So, yeah, great piece there. We'll get to the collected editions that we've been looking at in a moment, because the Rebellion 2011 version has another little short story or a one episode story right at the end, another little bit of Ian Gibson.
It does, yeah. Not related to the taxidermist at all, although you could say there's a slight connection, because it's another weird Mega City One fad fashion, call it what you will. Bum Rap.
Bum Rap, right, by John Wagner, Ian Gibson and Tom Frame.
Which I've forgotten of here.
Yes, it's there. I've been looking at the digital version, and it was actually the year before The Revenge of the Taxidermist. So it's 1997, Prog 1070, single episode about a new fashion trend, which, as the title suggests, leaves the bum exposed, basically.
Yes, the pink bum is all the rage.
Yes.
And it's another fun little story, really, about this preposterous... world of fashion.
And he lets Ian Gibson draw some memorable bits of clothing or lack of clothing, and some weird characters showing off their exposed derrières for all the megacity to see.
Which, of course, Dredd does not approve.
No, he doesn't approve of at all. Although, interestingly, and perhaps slightly unusually, he sort of he leaves it to some citizens' morals group to make a decision. Is that right?
Yes, he does, yeah. Who aren't very pleased with the designer, Mr. Randy Gitt.
Absolutely, yeah, of course. What else would he be?
Somebody name there. Yeah, there's... what is it? I did sort of flick through this one a bit at the end, I must admit. I didn't read it as thoroughly as the others, but there's accusations of somebody stealing the design. So Mr. Gitt decides to come up with the peekaboo front.
Yes,
as well,
of course.
So, and then of course Dredd just says that's indecent exposure, and off you go. So and Justice Department decide to just tax all this stuff out of the citizens' reach, really.
Yeah, basically that's it. It's, you know, another neat solution by Dredd and and the rest and the Sector House. They just impose a new tax on the peekabum style, and very soon it the bottom, as it says, the punchline. Of course, the bottom falls out of the market.
It's a funny one with some of Gibson's art. Again, is a bit different on this as well. Some panels look quite rushed, and some have certain bits of, you know, got a lot more detail on them, which is a bit strange at times.
Yeah, I mean, it is an oddity. It's a little, I mean, we won't spend too much time on it, because it's a little one shot at the end of the collection. It doesn't reach the heights of The Return of the Taxidermist, which, as listeners can probably tell, is my favourite of the three stories. And I'm guessing it's possibly yours as well, Steve.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. But I mean, yeah, I know they're sticking that at the end. That's just a fun little five-piece bit of Wagner humour.
Yeah, absolutely. A little punchline from Wagner at the end.
That we used to in those days.
Yeah, absolutely. So there we are at The Taxidermist. As you say, 2011 Rebellion Collection. We've already picked, I guess, our favourite stories, which is going to be the middle one, The Return of the Taxidermist by Wagner, Ian Gibson.
Yeah, I think that just kind of wins because it's even more crazy. There's so much more going on with the Olympics and the sports and everything. But I love the first one as well, though, where you're just introduced to the world of the whole taxidermist thing.
Yes, I do love that as well. It's a great first story by Cam Kennedy with Mark Farmer inks. And it's one of those wonderful sort of face in a crowd. You know, this character, Jacob Sardini, who sort of comes up against Dredd and sort of gets away with it. Just this wonderful little interaction they have in just a couple of panels.
Yeah, I mean, three different stories and, you know, three different artists. So the Trevor Hairsine work, his artwork is great as well. Some of the colours are a little bright at times.
Yeah.
Alan Craddock's colours, as colours were then, actually, so often.
Yes, yeah.
But they're all, you know, all good artists. And in the Revenge, I particularly like the shot of Sardini in the pages where Roy is skinning him. There's a picture, not while he's being skinned, just a picture of Sardini's face looking down at himself on the slab or something.
Yes, that's lovely. A lovely image. I'm looking at it now, yes.
Very nice depiction of him, but very different to Gibson's, of course. But.
Yeah. Okay, fabulous collection. You know, as we say, three great stories in there, particularly the first two, The Taxidermist and The Return of the Taxidermist, and a couple of knockout, you know, artists, I'd say two of the 2008 greats, Cam Kennedy and Ian Gibson, but of course Trevor Hairsine and Mark Firm are also in there as well. They're really good as well. So it's great stuff. So you've mentioned favourite story. Any sort of favourite supporting characters apart from Jacob himself, who sort of wins the prize? He wins the gold medal for the most fun character in this, I think.
He does, yeah. I don't know. Like you say, Fräulein Kupferstoffer was quite good. We don't see much of him, but I kind of like the Guru Mahama as well.
Yes, yeah.
He's barely in it, but he does come across as the, I don't know, typical kind of serene guru that you see in fiction and films. I think, but Sardini's assistants as well, when they appear, are quite funny because, of course, there's the one that stutters, but he only stutters because that's also in fashion as well.
That's fashionable as well, yeah, absolutely.
Which is another bizarre.
I might pick out our favourite as well, Agnes Laser Gaze Bolton as well.
Yeah, that is... that's a story in itself as well, isn't it?
Yeah,
really?
Absolutely. Yeah.
They're in competition. It's such a memorable part of it.
Okay, fantasy artwork time. If I could give you an unlimited budget and all of these pages and covers were available, could you pick one that you'd want to hang on the walls of the Langdon Mansion? Sorry, Longdon Mansion.
I found it quite hard to pick. Very hard to pick. Some stories you get a page, it's like, that's the one. This one, I found it quite difficult. There's great art in here, but it was a case of just for the art, the story, or whatever. In the end, I decided on something from the first story.
Oh, right, okay.
Rather than the Gibson Olympic one. And it's part two of the first story, and it's the colour centre page spread of the whole skinning process.
Right, yes, okay, I'm looking at it now, yeah.
And I think the reasons for that is just, not just because of the artwork, which is, of course, is fantastic, and you've got Sardini holding the scalpel, and you can see that he's, you know, committed to what he does and a master of what he does, and the whole thing of the bodies being up on a rack, being, you know, transported and moulded and whatever, and I think those two pages kind of sum up what Sardini's all about, and that's why I would pick that.
Okay, fabulous. So Cam Kennedy and Mark Farmer, possibly Tom Frame on the colours as well. It is wonderful, you know, Jacob working late at night in his lab, doing his work and doing it so well. I'm actually going to pick an Ian Gibson page. I'm going to pick from The Return of the Taxidermist when Jacob goes on his sort of like midnight walk and he sees the Mount of Eagles. So it's his page picked out really in sort of blues and blacks, a nighttime scene with Jacob Sardini looking up at the mountain. And it's just wonderful. So I'd like that one if I could have it. But
wonderful use of colour there.
Absolutely. Fantastically coloured page.
I mean, there's several I could choose.
Oh, of course, yeah.
I just thought that one kind of summed up the whole thing for me.
Okay. So the taxidermist that you've been looking at is available for £14.99 from 2000 AD. Or I've been looking at the digital version for £9.99 from 2000 AD and for all their apps. Or you can get it in the Hachette Mega Collection book, which was issue 43 or volume 72, still available for £9.99. It includes the first three stories. You won't find Bum Rap in there. You'll find some other stories about death in Mega City 1 at the end, and you'll find a run of marvellous essay by Michael Mulcher, as well as an introduction by Matt Smith. So that's still available as well. And of course, that's got the Steve Dillon cover as well. So it's also, you know, something else to commend it by. So they're available and, you know, definitely recommended. I must admit, as I say, I confess I hadn't read these before and they were fantastic. I really enjoyed them, particularly the first two stories, as we said, are just terrific. So thanks for picking them, Steve.
Yeah, I mean, they're not, some might say they're not essential because they don't have a wider impact on Dread over the years, but I think that if you're a fan of Dredd's world and certainly a fan of John Wagner's writing, then it's one that you should definitely have.
Yeah, and if you do like the quirky stories, you know, those early stories when Dredd would get involved in sort of more quirky, weird escapades, these are some great examples. You know, 2000 AD's always done that very well, particularly in those early years, and this is just terrific. John Wagner's got a really sort of like sinister and dark sense of humour, which is just wonderful.
Yeah, and it's really, if you want a story where you really see that, this is one of the ones to pick.
Okay, excellent, Steve. It's guest projects time. So I'm going to ask you a question. How did you come to be in Judge Minty?
Ah, Minty, yeah. When it was first announced, that they were doing it on the forum, it was literally just a case of all the they were asking if people wanted to get involved. When they first mentioned it, I wasn't too sure about it because I've never done anything like that at all. And then I saw some photos from the first shoot they did of it, and the second one they were doing in London. So being down in West Sussex, I thought, well, that's not far to go on the train. So I got a hold of Steve Sterlachini and said, oh, can I come along if you want? You still want somebody? He's like, yeah, come along. So they were doing a two-day shoot, so I intended to just do one for a bit of fun. And then I ended up doing all of them after that. And, yeah, it was fantastic. That was how I got involved in it. So I just went along for that one day to do, I think it was just background Mega C1 citizen thing. And wearing a judge costume, which of course was amazing. And then after that, it was like, oh, we're filming in Wales. Oh, yeah. So in the end, I intended to do one day in London and then end up going to Wales, Rotherham, and Portland.
Oh, right. Okay. So you got around a bit.
Yeah, it just became, and like I said, I've never done anything like it or had any idea of doing anything like it, but it was just so much fun. And everybody got on. And after that, it got me more and more. I went to a few comic conventions and things after that because I'd never bothered to go before because I never really knew other people that read 2000 AD. When I was a kid, I was the only kid that read it. And it's weird that I'd never stopped reading it, but I've got into it in a much bigger way as an adult. So yeah, so yeah, that's what was good about it. And of course, made many friends through that and got involved in the Southern Contingent meetings, and which we do occasionally. And I had I got a tiny part in the Strontium and Dog film as well. So.
Yes, I was going to ask you that as my next question. Are you in Search and Destroy? So the answer is yes, you are.
Briefly.
Briefly. Okay.
Yeah, I did one. I did one shoot. In one of the shoots in Kent for that, and I did a little bit of green screen stuff in London. But yeah, I've done a tiny bit of that, which is also great fun. It's gonna look really good from the little bits I've seen. But it's just a case of doing it for the fun of it for me, and you know, everybody just had a great time doing it.
It does sound like great fun, and although a certain amount of Welsh weather to be put up with, I guess.
Well, nobody worried about that. We just did it. Everybody just had a good time, no matter how bad the weather was or how far we travelled. We just had a laugh because we're just all fans.
That was
why it worked in that respect.
And your Forum avatar is your sort of mutant character that you played in Minty. Is that right?
Yeah, drawn by Cliff Robinson.
Yes.
I commissioned him to do a Minty picture, which was just amazing. Really, yeah. Incredible the amount of work that Cliff puts into it, and it's fantastic to deal with. But the amount of detail and work he puts in, and when you get it back, you get all the sketches and preliminary sketches, and you're in contact with him and say, do this, do that, and he asked me what names I wanted on such badges that were in the piece, and I just thought it was a great way of commemorating the great fan film that I was lucky enough to have a little part in.
Now, I've seen the commission. Is it still up on the internet anywhere that people can see, that listeners can go and find it?
Probably.
Is it? It's probably in the commission's thread on the forum, I think, is it?
It's somewhere, yeah. If people can still find that thread.
I'll see if I can track it down and put a link in the show notes, because it's a wonderful image.
Yeah, it is. I'm sitting at a computer now. If you Google Judge Minty Commission, you'll find it.
Oh, well, there you go. Right, perfect. So there you are, listeners. Google Judge Minty Commission and you'll see Steve's Cliff Robinson Commission.
It comes up as the first one. It was on bleedingcool.com because I remember they asked to put it on.
Right.
And actually, the second one, when you Google it, is the other one I had done by PJ Holden.
Ah, right, okay.
I knew it was out there somewhere. I mean, I haven't got a site, so I haven't got it hosted, but yeah, if you Google it, just Judge Minty Commission, you will find it.
Excellent. Okay, Steve, that's been great. Thank you for bringing along a really quirky and fun book, and I'm very envious of your experiences with Minty and on Search and Destroy. Who knows, when they make the taxidermist film, maybe I could be one of the bodies in the background.
Well, yeah, there's plenty of scope for that, I think.
Absolutely.
Maybe the first story. Not sure about some of those Olympic events.
yeah, I don't want to be in the staring one. Or the explosion in the bus queue. Okay, so thank you very much for listening to Mega City Book Club. Do get in touch with me if you'd like to join me and talk about a 2000 AD book like Steve has. You'll find a list of all the episodes picked so far and all the books chosen on the Facebook page. That's the best place to pop across, see what's going on, check out the book lists, and you can also find a list of books that I'd like to cover myself in the future, although those are being sort of narrowed down as people have been picking them, which is great. You can find all my links at megacitybookclub.com. You can email me mcbcpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks to RoboDub for our title music. Thanks to Brian from the British Invaders Science Fiction Podcast for his audio advice and hosting Mega City Book Club. And thanks again to Steve for being my guest and putting up with my slight cold. But we've both got through slightly ill health this week to do this one, Steve.
Yeah, we survived.
Yeah, we got through it. A bit of cursed earth pox getting us down, but we'll get through. So until next time on Mega City Book Club, when we'll be passing judgment on another fine 2000 AD book, it's goodbye from me, and
it's goodbye from him.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.